Right, the time is 3 minutes in the half, 7 o'clock, sorry, 6 o'clock, and a very, very good morning to you all, the Eagle FM listeners, no matter wherever you are tuning in from, we really, really appreciate your support, you always choosing us and tune in every day. So welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. This is a program dedicated to you, providing you with latest update on the economy, speaking about entrepreneurship, public policy, trade. That's what we give you until the half, 7:30, and my name is Loisa Shimi. And please, before we get into the international segment, please be sure just to connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village News page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House channel, for daily news update, and of course the newspaper alerts. And do not forget to download the important part, the Eagle FM app, available on your Google Play Store and of course the App Store, just to stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are around the world. You can able to listen to the app or to us, to all the programs, or whether if you missed out from other good or favorite show of yours, you can still tune in and listen to those past shows that you missed out on your or through the app. We have the lined up of podcast for you, waiting for you just to tune in. So all you have to do is just to download the app, and you can able to rather tune in, whether it's the current show or whether it's past show, you can able to tune in and listen. Do not also forget to download the Imba app on Google Store and Play Store. And to move on to the internationally, a segment is that our first item is that the Gambia's coastal capital faces threats from rising sea levels and seasonal flash floods. Now experts warned that without urgent action, now the city could be submerged, displacing thousands and crippling the national economy. Now the local communities are taking steps to make the region more climate resilient. We might take a listen to this.
In the recesses of Banjul North is this small fishing settlement. Situated in a low-lying coastal area, Nangan is one of the parts of the Gambia's island capital, highly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change, such as rising sea levels.
The situation is very stressful because looking at it, as I told you, during raining season, that is the most affected time, because that's the time the high tide affects
South Africa's halfway through,
and it will move towards the houses. So even to move out, I told you, is a problem. And if this is in the time of schooling days, kids will find it difficult to move out and go to school.
However, amidst the challenges, young people in this community are finding solutions. They are putting together a program to mitigate the risks of coastal flooding and other climate change-induced disasters ahead of the rainy season in June. Innovative approaches like this wooden shelter, designed to withstand erosion and coastal flooding, are being put up as part of efforts to build climate resilience.
So that is why you've seen where we have started. We have started trying to submerge the water from the root so that they can have easy access to move out. And if a vehicle is so coming, it will come easily.
However, the settlement of Nangan is unfortunately not alone. It seems every part of the city is facing increasing threats from the changing local climate. The capital, which is an island situated on the mouth of the River Gambia, faces increasing depletion amidst an encroaching sea, leaving much of it less than 1 meter above sea level.
As the Atlantic Ocean creeps closer each year, the future of Gambia's capital hangs in the balance. Experts warn that residents risk displacements and critical infrastructure could be swallowed by the sea.
Banjul has an urgent call to make with regards to climate change, and then it is actually going on, but we have to accelerate the effort because there are scientific researches that have actually been emanated that if Banjul haven't made the right cautionary measures, Banjul can be, we can lose more than 15% of our land, and that is considerable amount of land considering the limited size of Banjul and also the important structures we have here, government institutions.
In July and August 2022, flash floods in Banjul raised red flags, unleashing the most shocking devastation in decades, recording 10 inches of rainfall in just 20 hours. These ravaged shelters displaced and affected over 50,000 people. Authorities say they are implementing adaptation measures.
Efforts include mangrove restoration and reforestation programs that aim at stabilizing shoreline and enhancing natural defense in most sensitive areas around the Banjul city. And on infrastructure and community engagement,
with worries of what another major flooding or rise in sea levels might bring, these efforts cannot come quick enough for the residents of Banjul, but also...
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that the South Africa State Global Discussion on Sustainable Travel at the G20 Tourism Working Group in Durban now delegates a focus on improving air connectivity, supporting small businesses through innovation, and addressing climate-related challenges. Now, the forum highlighted African's tourism potential and emphasized inclusive economic growth in underserved regions.
Through its G20 presidency, meetings in all parts of the country since December have brought delegates from 20 territories. The second tourism working group took place in Durban, a city known for its warm climate, beautiful beaches and rich culture, but lately has been short on visitors.
It comes in handy at a time that the city of Durban is trying to resuscitate itself, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the recent floods that the city has suffered. It's a necessary boost that is given to the city's economy in order for it to stand up and run again.
The focus of the meeting was on the tourism industry's ability as a catalyst for social and environmental change so that places like Durban can benefit economically. Climate change will have a huge say on how people travel, so will affordability and ease of getting around.
The main thing is to improve on air connectivity so that there is seamless travel facilities, particularly within the continent of Africa, which is still a great challenge. Secondly, it needs to ensure that the people who remain at the periphery of economic activity are brought into the center.
Delegates also explored how financing artificial intelligence and digital innovation can support small businesses, especially in emerging destinations and remote towns across Africa, holding out for a spot on the global tourism map.
Eastern Cape and KZN are the most rural. So the G20 means a lot to us, and it has a huge impact in terms of what it wants to achieve. We're looking at, you know, bringing more tourists into our Eastern Cape because we've got a rich history, we've got a rich heritage, we've got, you know, beautiful architecture that is there that we can provide to these different countries.
South Africa will look to major tourism players for guidance. China, for example, is at the forefront of both outbound travel and technology investment. The talks offer a chance to strengthen cooperation, not just to realize the G20 vision, but also strengthen business with BRICS partners and others.
What we have made sure now is that all our BRICS partners, including India and China, that they have now got access to the same visa requirements to visit South Africa. So that in itself opened up a big market for us as South Africa, bringing in more tourists from China and bringing in more tourists from India.
South Africa, the first African nation to host the G20, is not looking to reinvent the wheel, but more to draw on tried and tested methods from G20 member states as the world moves towards smarter, greener travel. Africa.
All right, there you have it. Now, again, to move on to the next item in Morocco, is that Morocco welcomed 5.7 million tourists in the first 4 months of 2025, marking a 23% increase from the same period last year. Now, officials attributed the growth to improved air connectivity, strategic global marketing, and a stable investment climate. Now, the tourism surge is driving up revenues for hotels, restaurants, transport for services, services and tour operators, now while also creating jobs and breathing new life into the small businesses in both urban centers and rural areas.
All factors contribute to this surge in tourism, including enhanced air connectivity,
critical
strategic marketing efforts, and a diverse range of attractions.
Morocco Land of Light campaign is disseminated in 20 global tourist destinations through digital media platforms and giant display screens in world capitals. Thanks to the partnership with international airlines, the number of international flights increased by 20% in 1 year.
Foreign direct investment has played a crucial role in Morocco's tourism growth. Over the past 5 years, the country has averaged $3.5 billion annually in FDI across all sectors.
Foreign direct investments boost tourism projects and infrastructure and contribute to economic development. Morocco is a safe and stable country. That's why it continues to attract FDIs in all related sectors.
From the vibrant cities of Rabat, Marrakesh and Casablanca to serene beaches and unique desert resorts, Morocco offers a diverse experience for every type of traveler.
Morocco has a colorful scenery. We're also glad to live an immersive experience in the old Medina, where we can walk, eat, and meet an amazing, welcoming local community. Morocco is both traditional and very modern. It's an extraordinary experience.
The recent outstanding results of this industry highlight the major impact of tourism on job creation. For many local artisans like Sidi Omar Tadili, tourism serves as a crucial source of income.
The tourism boom has boosted the revenues of all Moroccan artisans. It has also opened up new markets while creating direct and indirect jobs in the craft industry across Morocco.
With Morocco set to co-host the 2030 FIFA World Cup and the 2025 African Cup of Nations.
All right, there you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Cube. Now, to move on to the next item is that the experts call for urgent depth reform to safeguard Africans' future.
A conference on Africa's debt crisis is underway in the capital Lome. With debt levels reaching alarming heights, the meeting, organized by the AU Commission's Department for Economic Development, Tourism, Trade, Industry and Minerals, aims to find solutions to the crisis and its impact on African economies. High-stakes discussions are expected on debt restructuring, sustainable financing and pathways to economic recovery. Let's get more insights from Jason Braganza. He is the Executive Director at the African Forum and Network on Debt and Development, AfroDad. He joins us from Lome in Togo, where the conference is taking place. Thank you very much, Mr. Braganza, for joining us. Now, the theme of this conference is restoring and safeguarding debt sustainability. What do you expect to come out of the conference so that it doesn't end up being just another talking shop?
Thank you very much for having me. And yes, a very important conference taking place here in Lome. I think three things we need to consider. We had a very powerful opening segment by two heads of state, the president of Togo and the president of Ghana, who gave very powerful speeches indicating just how deep the debt crisis is on the continent and the need for a renewed restructuring mechanism. And I think that political will and that political message should send resounding message across the continent that at the heads of state level, they need to take this situation extremely seriously because it is going to mortgage and challenge the development pathway for the continent in the future. The second one is that we have a number of central bank governors and ministers of finance who are deeply involved in engagements with institutions like the International Monetary Fund, who are charged and tasked with their debt restructuring. And as we know it right now, the existing debt restructuring mechanism under the common framework is not fit for purpose. And this is a key message that also came out today on the first day of the conference from these ministers of finance and central bank governors. So hopefully, at the end of these 3 days, we will have some sort of commitment to move away from this common framework that's not working for Africa and towards a more intergovernmental participatory process where both creditors, all creditors and all borrowers can sit down around the table. And lastly, I think that...
Yeah, go ahead.
Agenda on debt restructuring does not, an agenda on debt restructuring that does not undermine Agenda 2063 and the pathway to which our economic transformation is geared towards.
All right, so I'm keen actually on that political message that you talked about that was communicated today. We've had some staggering figures being thrown around about Africa's debt. So we have over 20 countries nearing or facing debt distress. What are some of the key strategies these countries should look at to manage their debt more sustainably?
I think first and foremost, at the heads of state level, we need to come together and start coordinating and having a coherent common message on what the debt crisis actually is on the continent. And hopefully this conference will give us that at the end of these 3 days and that political messaging that we have been provided with by the heads of state from Ghana and Togo. Secondly, it's very important that countries that are entering restructuring, Zambia, Ghana, Ethiopia, and now Cote d'Ivoire, that they ring fence and protect public services to ensure that these resources are not diverted away from the much needed development agenda in order to provide resources for creditors. And the third and final one is really to call out the ineffectiveness of the existing debt restructuring mechanism under the common framework that excludes certain creditors like multilateral lenders and certain types of private creditors, which sort of undermines the ability of countries to approach the common framework and get their debt restructured. So we also need to make sure that there's a correct environment for countries that want to seek debt restructuring, that they have that correct environment. And a fourth strategy would be to ask and request en masse as 55 African countries for a debt moratorium or a debt service suspension with non-interest rate bearing whilst restructuring is going on, so that there's no crowding out of fiscal space towards much needed public services.
There's something you mentioned there about development, and you know, it's usually a very delicate balancing act for governments. You know, we have development on the one side and debt management on the other, and there's often a concern about the impact of high debt on public services. So how can African governments balance debt management with the need to provide essential services to their citizens?
There are three ways, actually. We've seen in Zambia, for example, they've introduced a debt to tax revenue ratio, which means that, you know, only a certain percentage of their tax revenues can be allocated to debt servicing. And what this means is that it frees up a lot more of the tax revenue that the government of Zambia is going to be collecting in order to invest in public services.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the renewable energy solutions improve healthcare in Somalia.
There is a biennial sunlight. Somalia is now working with partners like UNICEF and the World Health Organization to harness solar energy for health facilities, which is powering real-time disease surveillance, improving diagnostics for measles and polio, and strengthening laboratory capacity. Waberi Health Center in Mogadishu has benefited from this initiative.
Our department operates 24 hours a day, so electricity is crucial. A solar-powered system is vital because other sources of electricity are unreliable. We experience frequent blackouts, and sometimes we have to use torches. That's why we're requesting a fully solar-powered system.
Since 2018, this vaccine storage facility, like many others, have been operating on uninterrupted solar power, avoiding the high cost of conventional electricity.
Sometimes electrical faults damage vaccines and cold chain refrigerators. Maintenance is costly and frequent blackouts disrupt our operations. That's why we depend on solar systems. They are reliable and effective.
Health workers say solar energy installations have freed up resources to address other pressing health needs.
Electricity is very expensive. We used to pay hundreds of dollars each month. Solar is much more cost-effective. With a full solar setup, we can reallocate those funds to more critical areas in healthcare.
Health sector partners affirm their commitment to continue working with the Somali government to expand access to essential energy for the health sector.
The government inside is implementing solar irrigation of health facilities with the support of the World Bank and WHO. And in addition to this, also UNICEF, working with the government, is planning to solarize health facility. Approximately 25 health facilities that are implementing better life are planned to have solar-powered electricity.
According to the World Health Organization, only 28% of health facilities in Somalia have access to reliable and uninterrupted electricity. The federal government is now rolling out the Somalia Electricity Sector Recovery Project, which seeks to expand access to affordable and clean electricity while rebuilding the national electricity supply industry.
All right, the time is 24 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item in South Africa, is that the despite Eskom's aggressive maintenance, stage 2 load shedding is currently underway and will remain for another day. Now, the utility says higher electricity usage and unplanned breakdowns brought on the latest bout of power cuts. Now, the electricity minister says, despite those issues, Eskom is committed to its winter plan, adding that there will be consequences if their various power stations fail to play their part. We might take a listen.
There will be consequences if the various power stations fail. Vuyolwethu Yamba reports.
Load shedding made a comeback this week. But despite this hiccup, Eskom CEO says some of the units that experienced downtime are back in operation and that the planned maintenance schedule is forging ahead.
The important aspect at this point in time in the calendar year is that our planned maintenance needs to be tapering down. We indicated that by the middle of May, the anticipation is to have planned maintenance below 5,000 megawatts and gradually towards 4,000. We are already below 5,000. We're not seeing the benefit of that because we've got the slippages that we have to deal with. It's primarily around six units in Duva, in Hoofdvlei, Kriel, Medupi and Tutuka, and the teams are hard at work bringing those units back into operation. In fact, some of them have started coming through.
Despite the aggressive maintenance, stage 2 load shedding will remain in effect until Thursday.
Our teams will, of course, assess the situation every day at midday, and today at midday, the same exercise will be undertaken to assess where we are and how the evening looks like.
Despite implementing stage 2 load shedding, Electricity Minister Hosi Ntshura Makhuba says the utility's winter plans are on track.
In the winter outlook, we make the point that we are entering this winter of 2025 on a much more better footing than we did the winter of 2024. And what are those key features from a generation point of view? The first one was that we are entering this confidently in that Quebec unit number 2 was synchronized to the grid on the 30th of December 2024. And then Quebec unit number 1, although it's out, but we are projecting that it's going to come back in July of 2025, when we'll be at the peak of the winter period. So as the point is that during this winter, we're going to have the benefit of all of the Quebec units at least by July of 2025.
However, Ramakhoba did acknowledge that efforts to limit planned maintenance have been unsuccessful.
This represents, I think, a failure on our part to ensure that there's proper management of the OEMs, and then we have that has resulted in outage slips. The executive management team will be engaging first with the general managers at the various power stations. I think there has to be an appreciation that we have entered a new domain, and that domain requires that although we have registered significant progress, but I think we're getting to a point where there has to be consequence management. If there's a promise to bring a unit by this date, we're not sitting with a money problem, we're not sitting with a skills capacity issue, we are sitting with the ability for us to do proper planning and ensure that the units are able to come back.
Ramakopa emphasized.
All right, there you have it. Just lastly, on the international segment, is that the government has concluded modalities for the Chizamba solar PV project. Now, the largest grid-connected solar development in the country's history. Now, this follows the signing of a $100 million loan by Karimba North Bank Extension Power Corporation and Stanbic Bank. We might take a listen to their specific update.
It is a powerful story of hundreds. The 100 megawatt Chizamba solar PV project has officially sealed its financial blueprint with a $100 million loan agreement inked between Stanbic Bank and the Kariba North Bank Extension Power Corporation. Speaking at the landmark event, Kariba North Bank Extension Power Corporation Chief Executive Officer Boyd Kanchele detailed how the financing will power up the ambitious project.
It was 30% equity and 70% debt. And this is the reason why we are here. It has been a long journey, running for almost 8 months, 7 to 8 months, to reach this stage. We are grateful to all the teams that took part in this process of to reach financial close today.
Adding to the discussion, Stanbic Bank, the main financier, shared insights into the bank's role and expectations for this energy leap.
This has now, this needed to be accelerated, and we thank you for the patience through the diligent work that has happened, and we know our teams on Power China have been working very hard to get the project on the line, and we're thankful for the patience that they...
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers,
they have exhibited over this prolonged period, but we finally are here.
And weighing in from the government side, Energy Acting Director Mafao Ziba said the solar initiative will plug the country's growing energy gap.
Our role really has been to facilitate these investments in the country, provide the necessary reforms and policies that enable investments, and I think we can just pledge that we continue to do so, and indeed to encourage innovative ways of getting these projects going.
Meanwhile, Zesco Board Chairperson Vixen Kube said the venture is a game changer, the largest solar investment in sub-Saharan Africa outside of South Africa.
This project we're talking about today falls into the larger picture of the president's vision of 1,000 megawatts by December 2025. We have hit one step. We are after this project, the steps will be much larger because everyone will now see that it can work.
Electricity generated by the Chizamba plant will mainly power First Quantum Minerals Limited (FQM) and several strategic domestic installations.
We are excited. We are a huge consumer of power. One mill train in Kalumbela or Kansanshi takes on average 50 plus megawatts. So this is the kind of collaboration that unlocks innovation.
This is not net new demand from the mine. This power displaces what ZESCO would have otherwise been supplying the mine and makes that equivalent capacity or energy available for supply to the rest of the grid, the general grid. So it's bringing that relief that the country needs, that the system needs, and it's very important that we understand and underscore that.
With construction in its final stretch, the Chizamba Solar PV project is set to go live soon, marking a new dawn in Zambia's renewable energy journey.
All right, there you have it. The time is 33 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and it's early morning scoop. We can go through the very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take you through the local news. Do not go away.
Shake your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Deo Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutia with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafa, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuita Moshiwana, E. Moyao, Otaingo Botisamani, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangeka. Faithanina, Omeguro, Nira.
All right, the time is 35 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And if you just joined us right now, thank you, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. This is the show where we're giving you news about the economy of the country, entrepreneurship, and of course trade. That's what we give you until the hour of 7:30. And to start here is that yesterday Prime Minister Aya Ngurale paid the courtesy visit to the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, now to discuss the subject of merging of the Ministry of Agriculture and Ministry of Fisheries. Now we might take a listen to Ignacia Zamwani, Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, and what she has to say in this regard. We might take a listen.
And that we are food secure, that we have water, and access to potable water, and that every Namibian has a place that they can call home. That's our responsibility. And we are feeding the nation. Because we have everything from the sea, the underwater, to underground, and on the ground, and over space. So this is a very important mandate that we have. And we must truly, all of us, see ourselves as part and parcel of this big mandate that we have to deliver on. So on behalf of the senior management that is sitting around the table here, and indeed on behalf of the Deputy Minister, right Honorable Prime Minister, we would like to assure you that we are ready for the mandate that has been assigned to us. We are ready to listen to you this morning as you re-emphasize the directives of the Excellency, the President, Dr. Nandi Daitwala. I'm also pleased to inform you that the Ministry has just concluded a strategic planning workshop where I was not part and parcel, I just joined the last day, but I am informed that my colleagues around the table reflected very deeply on their mandate, on our performance, and the expectations of the Namibian people. And that as part of that process, They are currently working towards the reintegration, the integration of the two ministries, that of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, and the Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources, and the development of a new structure, organizational structure, that will better position us to deliver efficient services to our people. And I want to emphasize again that our commitment is very clear. We are here to serve the people of Namibia. We are not here to serve ourselves and to sit in these big offices and to be comfortable about the positions that we have. We are to be the farmers on the ground. We need to be out and about. We need to see to it that we facilitate and we enable access to the basic services that are required by our people. Once again, right, Honorable Prime Minister, on behalf of the leadership of the ministry, I am very delighted that you took your time to visit us. Here you have the entire leadership of the sector. We are also joined by the public enterprises that falls under our mandate. And it is a great honor for us to host you this morning. I'm aware that this is not an unfamiliar territory for you. You, as a ministry, we are very proud that one of our own is now our Right Honorable Prime Minister, a good inspiration to others to work hard with dedication and commitment, deliver on your mandate, and you'll be seen, and maybe the next time you will be the Prime Minister. Right Honorable Prime Minister, we are truly humbled that you have taken time out of your very hectic.
Yeah, on our next item, Namibia imported 135,597 day-old chicks and 17,999 layers for bleeding purposes. So now, meanwhile, Namibia also imported around 7 million kg during the quarter under review. Now, of those imports, 64.2% were from Poland, 18.8% from Brazil, 12.4% from South Africa, and 4.7% jointly from Argentina, Spain, Switzerland, Thailand, Ukraine, and of course, Swaziland. Unona, Gustav Unona, just to unpack this for us. A very good morning to you, Mr. Unona, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Very good to you and all the listeners for Eagle FM.
We're doing great. Yeah, Mr. Unona, you are a poultry farmer, right? Like, discuss maybe with us why there are so many percentage coming from imports while we also have our own producer. We have you guys in the country.
Oh, thank you so much. First of all, we have to understand that chicken are different. And not all the chicken that we are importing, some of the chicken, we already have them here, yeah. But there are those chicken that we don't have. The reason why we are importing is because there are chicken that we don't have in our country, such as broiler chicken, layer chicken, sussex, buffer piston, black astrolab, cuckoos, and etc. So these are the main chicken that rare in our country, but the more chicken that we focus on, that we always order, rare chicken and broiler chicken.
Okay.
This chicken, they've been used, layer they are used for egg production, while the broiler, they are being used for meat production.
Okay.
So,
like, why do we not have such a breed in the country?
Thank you. First of all, the listener have to know that the breeds, those breeds, or according to nature, there is a thing which is called parent stock.
Okay.
When we talk about parent stock in poultry, we mean that the chicken that
are hatching the same breed exactly in color, in manner. So not like us here in Namibia, especially at northern area where we be, we have those chickens that we call Shivambo chicken.
Yeah.
But worldwide they call it marathon chicken.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because when you want to catch that chicken, you have to run.
Mm.
That's why they call it marathon chicken. So we don't have those parent stock of the other chicken.
Okay.
We don't have parent stock for layer chicken. We don't have the parent stock for broiler chicken. The reason is this one. The country, those are having those chicken, they have a restriction whereby they have a certain law which prohibits them not to sell out to those, the original or the parent stock to other countries.
Okay.
Their main reason is to protect their resources, because that chicken is their resources. They are afraid that if they happen to sell you the parent stock, you might going to produce your own parent stock and they will never come back to buy from them anymore.
Mm.
So therefore they would rather protect their chicken. What are they used to give us? That is a copy.
Okay.
It's not the original one. They kept the original. I know that there's something maybe perhaps they used to do in order to keep their original one, and then they gave us copy. That's why we keep on or continuing buying from them every year. Because those chicken, the broiler, they only take 2 months and then they grow and they are big for meat production. While the layer chicken, they take 5 to 6 months and then they can be able to produce egg production.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the challenges in within the sector itself, what do you suggest in the solution to expand our exports in the poultry sector, considering that we only exported 3 million kg while we imported around 7 million kg, Mr. Ununa?
We also need to expand our farming production.
Okay.
If we want to venture or take a competition, join those competition. So, what we need to do, the Minister of Agriculture and the Minister of Trade and Industry, I think they need to sit and compromise in order to assist the poultry farmer that are trying, in order to elevate them in production. Because there are a place where we are not doing anything, especially when it comes to exporting. Maybe it is also us because we are not all focusing on producing in bulk. We are producing small, that is the quantity that's only enough to sell locally. Even locally, we are not even satisfying the Namibian people. So I think the government of the Republic of Namibia, they need to ask those poultry farmers, what do you want here and there? From my point of view, these people are all, yes, I'm a farmer. I don't need even money to go buy what. I just want the material.
Okay.
Once materials is given to farmers, it can also help them to produce more and reduce to the import. And also, the other thing, secondly, the Minister of Trade, they also need to sit with the other country in order to at least to have those original chicken, especially the one that mostly likely to import. Because, as I said, that those foreign stock, we don't have them here. And that is the main challenge that caused our government to import. At least bring those foreign stock in our country, and then we'll start to produce our own chicken. Even though they are not a lot, probably it can help when it comes to import. We are not going to spend a lot of million if we are producing our own chicken. Because there are some countries that they never even import any meat of chicken. Those countries like Brazil, Poland, Netherlands, they don't import chicken. They produce in their own country. They support agriculture production, especially poultry sector. And then once they boost it, it now generates a lot of money.
I mean, you mentioned our own breed, which is now marathon chicken. Like, why are we not having our own marathon chicken in store?
It's a good question.
Okay.
The reason why we don't have goat chicken and the marathon chicken in our own market in Namibia, one of the things we fail to succeed when it comes to the environmental health or food health. No, before you did not put your chicken in a retail, you need to call the Minister of Agriculture together with the Minister of Health. They have to come and make an inspection that what is your poultry farming all about?
Okay.
How do you feed your chicken? How do you medicate your chicken? With all those requirements, if you what expected by the food or by health organization, if you fulfill it, there's no problem. But the problem also, another problem that we are having is the production. We are not produce in bulk. We are failing to produce in bulk. You know, if we agree that you are able to produce 10,000 chicken per month, you don't need to give excuse next month that I'm very sorry, I did not manage to produce 10,000. I only produce 5,000. Because those chicken, they are already needed somewhere that where you used to produce or to supply already. So, what is needed here, perhaps the government, through the Minister of Agriculture, and again through our councillors, they needed to compromise with the farmers, especially those who are living in a rural area, because it's where a lot of farmers live. And then at least they can able to convince them why do they need to produce a lot, where to sell, because sometimes you can produce but you don't have a demand. You produce according to the demand.
Okay.
Yes. Once the people, the demand, I know that the demand is already higher, but the production is very low due to the food. Don't forget that the chicken food, they are also expensive in our country compared to other countries such as South Africa and Botswana.
Okay.
Yes, they are saying that due to the maize production that we don't produce the quantity that is required. So, we don't have a problem to put our marathon chicken in a market, as long as there should be a tasty food, as long as we fulfill what is required by health inspection. We are afraid that perhaps Okawa Poetry or Mr. Unona is going to give food. They are not even inspected. So people are eating chicken, which perhaps maybe they are, I fed my chicken with a poisonous food.
Oh, okay.
And then it's very dangerous to have. The food needs to be inspected. And that is where we are failing. We don't want the government to make full inspection. We just want to sell. If we also, as a farmer, accept the government to do their job, to inspect the production, we are also allowed to sell. Not only at Omatara. And on the other side, as long as also our government is supporting our food production, especially when it comes to poultry farming, it could also expand our marketing and it could also reduce the import of chicken farming or chicken meat in our country. So much, finally, I would like just to tell our fellow farmer that, you know, this time is weather is changing. And wherever the winter is changing, certain diseases, especially flu, used to come and affect our chicken. So I would like to advise or encourage our fellow farmer that you better start to give proper medication to your chicken now, especially to protect them from flu. To protect them against coryza, because chickens, they used to be affected by different diseases. Those are the most diseases that affect chicken. Coryza and the flu. Once you give those medicines such as Newcastle, IB5, Gaboro in order, that generation could grow without any infection. And we also need to control how our chicken working. We have to monitor their movement. You know, many people, their chicken, you can find them just scattering around. Whereby they can take certain infection over there and somewhere there. So it's better for us to start now in order for our people also to eat healthy food. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Unona, for having you.
Thank you so much, Eagle Fem.
All right. There you have it. Another poultry farmer, Elias Awanginde, shared his thoughts on why Namibia spends more money importing chicken. You might take a listen.
Madam, that situation is created by us Namibians due to the laziness.
Okay.
So we are not so serious to develop our country. Because sometimes we don't even conduct researches so that we can see, like you said, we are depending to the imported chickens. Regardless of their whatever may be, broilers or layers. So, we are lazy so that we suppose all people could be, or we could be at least researching to see how others, those countries who are exporting to us do in, how do they take care, or let me say, bring up their children, their chickens. Because if you research and you see others are doing so and so, what is difficult to you if you are also a human being like them? You can do. And again, it's also a matter of we are also lacking communication, especially to the young ones. They don't want to do something for their country. For example, I can give you an example of the vision of our founding father,
the first president of Namibia, late comrade president Sam Nyoma, who put that vision 2030. It was supposed to encourage us to boost our morale or our courage that we should at least work hard so that we can make it a reality. So therefore, what I'm seeing to solve those problems is us Namibians to come together, especially young ones. If you have little, or let me say, a little fund or amount of money, to discuss with others in a specific, or that let me say, in your villages, so that you come together, put together the resources you have. I'm talking of financial and all resources. And then you can also start with that. I mean, having your project on chicken, and again at the same time, one has to, or you have to, conduct or write letters to different companies, non-organization or government organization, and the government as well, offices, so that one has to talk with the problem. Where do you have challenges? So that maybe the government can meet you halfway to assist you in case, or instead of being just idle, like we are now idle, and we will be just depending on import. And really, truly speaking, financially or economically, we are now feeding other nations. So that is my answer, that I'm saying we are lazy.
All right.
And the people do not want even to make researches, to conduct researches, to know, or to otherwise to have a wake-up situation which is telling them or making them able to do something.
In your opinion, what do you maybe suggest is the solution to expand our export? I mean, right now, we exported 3 million kg, while we imported around 7 million kg. I mean, that's a very huge number. So now, what is your solution? What is the solution according now to you as a farmer?
So the solution on that is just the seriousness. If we are really thinking for the benefit of our nations and our economies, what we have to do is only to come together, or even like young ones to attend different courses. There are some courses and trainings in this country. Most of the time you hear from radios talking of, no, those who are willing to have a training or experience on what, then we have to attend those type of short courses and the long courses as well, if one is affording, so that we can come to the conclusion of seeing and knowing that, no, apparently, to have our country self-sufficient on the direction of, like, poultry we are talking about, it's only when I'm doing this and this and this. And they will be now able to have even, to make some decisions of seeing, maybe in this case, because I'm lacking funds or whatever, maybe I can at least go to what office and so on, so that we can then come up to promote our economy. And again, one thing I'm seeing also, it is needing dedication, and at least I think this is also not offending, I'm talking the truth. It needs to somebody to make the refreshment, or let me say entertainment or enjoyment, to come to position the either second or third position instead of making the first choice, because like in our country, I'm talking what I have seen, people, young ones, are too much interested in alcohol drinking.
Doc.
They are too much in alcohol. Instead of thinking and, I mean, develop their country. I think if one is the, maybe trying, or let me say, decided to put the drinks apart, I don't mean one must stop. Because if you eat porridge, you should not stop porridge, but you have the time to eat, and you have the other time, which is the first priority, to produce.
That is
what I'm thinking it would be the solution.
All right. Maybe the challenges like within the sector itself, maybe that might also be the reason why the sector is not really progressing.
Thank you very much, ma'am. It's a very good question.
All right.
So, challenges are many in the direction of poultry farming, and the need for resources is also there. That's why I can maybe give you an example, like working with the project on poultry or farming on poultry, there are challenges because has to know that you have to have feedings of those chickens you have. And, nowadays, Namibian products, or let me say products in Namibian market, let me say the chicken feed is expensive. So therefore, that one is also a challenge. Therefore, that challenge needs also, I can say, organizations and our government to assist those who are striving, so that they can also, in that way, it can also boost the morale of those who are sitting quietly to see that, no, apparently if we do like the others doing, we will be going ahead. So, there are challenges of feeding. There are challenges of vaccinations on chicken. There are challenges of, infrastructure, or let me say, shelters to accommodate those poultry, because they have to be protected from different angles. The animals, those which are cannibals who can kill the chickens, or maybe we talk of snakes, and everything which is dangerous to the poultry. We need also them to be in a better, or not better, but 100%, or maybe I can say excellent protection. And we have also the challenge of sometimes water resources also. I'm talking of like in our region, Angwena, Congo, where I'm farming from my own field. There are scarcity of water in our region. However, if the government is assisting, because you cannot have those poultry without water, you have to have water for them to drink and also to wash, maybe where you see need to be washed. Therefore, all those are challenges. And also solution or assistance, I can say, to assistance to those farmers.
Okay.
I think those are the main, and again, I think I nearly forgot one. We have also a challenge of qualified, workers. You need to employ somebody, but you cannot afford financially. As a result, sometimes you just strive by yourself and your family because you are scared of having a qualified person. You cannot afford to get his pay or her pay. Therefore, we need really financial assistance.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Elias, for having you today.
Thank you very much. You are welcome, madam.
All right.
Thank you, ma'am.
There you had it from a poultry farmer, Mr. Elias. He emphasized more on risk, lack of research among the sector itself. And of course, the laziness where he said it attributed also to how we spend more on import when it comes to the import industry. I mean, the poultry industry itself. So now we will take a very short commercial break with once we return, also give you or share more of the local content. Do not go away.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudia with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. She calls a father and Anna, longish fa, yai, she became a E. Moyawa, or Tango got some money. Fa, Yanamibia, on the Tombanawa, or Jika. Faith and Nina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongish Fire, Kupiramo, Eagle FM Media House. We 22 Mimiha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi paregi uimu po yo mwe programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onora heta tuimu. Datunda tu heari jamano tano o ambiyaji. Eagle FM, go high.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM, let's you express your constitution.
All right, welcome back. The time is 10 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. And this is early morning script. Now to move on to the next item is that we also want to understand the roles and responsibility of law now in the economic building as well. So on this, my colleague Benedetta Seaman engaged with Albertina Angola, finally a student, to discuss about the role of lawyers in the economic development. We might take a lesson.
So as we are still continuing with our early morning scoop, so today we are going to talk about the role of lawyers in the economic development. So as we all know that lawyers play a crucial role in economic development by ensuring that projects comply with regulations, facilities, transactions, and help secure financing, they work with government entities, private businesses and developers to achieve economic growth. So today we are going to engage with one of the student. She's doing a law. She's a final year student. Hello, final year student law. So, her name is, Albertine Ngula. So good morning, Albertine Ngula, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm good. So, Albertina, today we are going to talk about what is the role of lawyers in economic development?
Lawyers play a crucial role in the shaping of economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyers ensure that they support business growth, investment, they resolve disputes between individuals, which also work on businesses and individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Why do individuals need to be represented when they have done criminal activities? So, you know, sometimes whenever somebody done something wrong, obviously the magistrate could have to say, if you are not going to the court, you make sure you need to have your lawyer that will represent you. Why? What you think about this?
Okay, why do criminals need legal representatives?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the legal system is based on fairness, and every individual, regardless of their crime, is entitled to have a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it does a fair trial. But in this case, lawyers ensure that justice is upheld, protecting the accused from unfair treatment and being on their side.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my third question is being a lawyer a good or a bad profession? Because you told me that you are now, you want to become a lawyer and you are a final year student that is doing law. So what do you think, or what do you think about being a lawyer? Is it really a good thing, or is it really a good career? Or what do you think about this, like being a lawyer, is it really good or bad profession?
Okay, being a lawyer, this depends on the perspective of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I would say being a lawyer is a highly respected profession that offers challenges, financial rewards, and also it can be stressful and demanding. It requires long working hours. But I would say being a lawyer is a good profession.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really something that it's a really a good career. So like being a lawyer is something that is really good, especially to the society and to the whole country.
Yes, it's a good profession.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my last question, Tina, is what are some of the ethics and standards of lawyers that need to follow when doing their work?
Okay, lawyers should ensure that they keep their client information very private,
mm-hmm.
which I would say confidential. And secondly, lawyers should be honest and should always stick to the truth in legal proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much, Albertina, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop. I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a blessed day to you too. Bye.
Likewise.
Yeah, on our next item, Anorit launches a Takamesa safety campaign following the electrocution strategy in the Kavango West. And now I'm joined by my colleague, Anakleta Haikera in the Kavango West region, just to give us this particular update. A very good morning to you, Anna, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Very good morning to you, Loisa, and to all the listeners of Eagle FM.
We're doing great. Yeah, Anakleta, could you please maybe explain the details of the accident and, of course, how the Takamesa initiative also aimed to reduce a similar incident occurring in the future?
To those that have been following many reports of the Kavango West, three people died in an electrocution incident in the Kavango West. Just in 1 month, which was February, the three individually tragically lost their lives in separate electrocution incidents in this region. And the first incident happened to two NamWater employees, the late Matthew Shilemba and Martin, who were actually electrocuted while attempting to repair a water pump at the Kavango River in Nankudu. And then the next incident happened of a Norwich employee who lost his life due to suspected electricity shorts while working on electricity poles in Insu Village. The same, it also happened in the same region and in the same month. All right, for the two NamWater employees, mm-hmm. they were busy working on water to repair a water pump at the river.
Okay.
And in the process of repairing the water pump, they were electrocuted.
Mm.
And then with the NORED employee, he lost his life while on duty. He allegedly went up on the pole to repair electricity that was down at Insu village. And in that process, he got electrocuted. Mm-hmm. Now, in response to this incident, NORED came up with an initiative that is going to run for 3 months, and it's a campaign called Takamesa. Takamesa is a campaign that says be careful, and this one is just to run awareness of the people within the Kavango West region to be very careful when using electricity, and also to look out for any danger of electricity. And also in the process, the Kavango East governor was among those that launched the campaign, who mm-hmm. is Verna Sinimbo. She actually expressed the condolences and emphasized the danger posed by electricity. And she said by launching Takamesa, it's going to be a safety campaign that is going to educate residents on proper electrical practices and reduce the risk of a future incident in the region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now maybe what maybe additional measures have been maybe implemented just to ensure the safety of the resident also?
For the officials that lost their lives mm-hmm. at work, it was also stressed that as an employer or employee, people need to put measures aside for them so that the employees, when working, they will be utilized with all the sections and also they should also adhere to strictly safety protocols when they are working on electricity. Okay. And also many residents who attended were eventually told or also showed how to use electricity. For instance, many people will want to use electricity while your hands are wet. So the campaign also showed how people should not have wet hands and go and walk on electricity. Your hands should also be dry. But those type of measures were put forth for the people to also know how dangerous it is to walk with electricity while you're wet. Looking at the event itself, it has when the people were shown how they should use electricity and how they should be careful when using electricity, the event itself underscored the critical importance of electricity safety and also the 3 months. It's going to be an ongoing education for the resident on how vigilant they should be when using electricity so that we can prevent further loss of life. Kurenkuru and the surrounding villages, these are people that are just getting to have development, right? Like electricity is new to them. They, for the past years, they've been using candles and also to say cell phones, just to have light in their houses and solar system. But now that they have electricity, this is something, you know, as for kids, they will always want to play around with anything that they see. So maybe as parents and residents, we should just be very conscious and also very careful when we see something that can lead to electrocuted or something that if we have wires that are maybe torn or eaten or something like that, we should always report this to people that knows how to fix it. We cannot fix it ourselves, but it's better to call the NORED staff to come and fix the electricity in your house.
All right, thank you very much, Anakleta, for the information.
You're welcome.
All right. All right, on our next item, our traditional authorities are the custodian of customary law and, of course, maintain the traditional orders. So now it is not also clear how traditional leaders go beyond their roles and, of course, contribute to economic development. And, of course, today we will look at the context of the roles of traditional leaders and the role they play in addressing current economic problems. And now joining us to unpack this is Harutale Festus, who is one of the assistants to the headman in the Ohangwana region. A very good morning to you, Mr. Festus, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Eagle FM.
We are doing great.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm also doing very well. I'm on the show.
Oh, okay, thank you so much. Yes, Mr. Festus, maybe just speak to us about what is maybe the main role in the economic development of your constituency regarding now you as the assistance to the traditional leader.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Festi Atitale, from Ndola constituency in Omakango village, in Angwena region.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up there. I'm a personal assistant to the headman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to tell you that we having a lot of things to do the role to play in the village.
Okay.
We are there to make sure that in the village there is a peace established and people, they understand one another. Or if there is a problem coming in the village, we have to take it to the headman to inform him, to tell him the situation on the ground that there is something happening in the village and we need a solution. We need your intervention so that you can solving the problem, so that we can get an amicable solution.
Okay.
And some other times we also facing a lot of challenges when the people, they are not compromising one another. They are not understanding one another.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of the... okay, let me say for distance, this year we are appreciated. We are cultivating very well mango. The rainfall was very nice, satisfying for us, and everybody was expecting to plucking mango. Some of the people, they are not at the role of the headman. Whenever the headman is telling the people that, informing the people that, all the people must close their cooker shop so that the people can not able to go to the cooker shop so that they can able to busy calculating the mahangu in their fields.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, they are there, the instruction which is given by the headman, some of them, they are not.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, those people who are not at there, the role which is, said by the headman, they are the one crying, they said, epangelo, narininge posha, epangelo, narininge posha. Where is the people? The others, they are cultivating mango so that they can have enough mango to cater them the whole year, to cater them the whole year instead of depending to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that regard, is it maybe right for traditional leaders to step out for their role and, of course, initiate projects that address also the needs for their people? I mean, you mentioned that most of the people do not really adhere to the role where they need also to cultivate and produce more for themselves or for their family. Now, in that regard, sometimes now, if they don't have enough food for their families and all that, can you guys go beyond and also initiate also projects that address the needs for your people?
Yes. Okay, once we receiving any messages that there is one of the village mates which is not having enough food,
mm-hmm.
we have to take a message and to discuss with the headman so that we can help out that particular person.
Mm-hmm.
The headman, he have to see how we going to help him, or he or she, or we trying to either to notify the councillor, which is our councillor, Comrade Shividi, Fernand Shividi, which is our councillor for Ndola constituency. We going to there with the headman to say, I know there is one of the village mate which is not having something to eat here, and then the councillor can send the message to the government so that the government can intervene to supply mango, I mean to supply a bag of meal and the cooking oil and some of tin of the fish, and see how we solving the problem in our society.
Yeah, and looking at the post-independence, are there maybe roles for traditional leaders given less attention post-independence in addressing the broader socio-economic issues? And of course, now to you, according to you, how can we maybe uplift your roles and coexist also with the government?
Okay, no, as a government, we are humble to the government maybe to look after also the headmen of the village.
Okay.
Because they're having also a big responsibility to play in the village.
Mm.
They are facing a lot of problems sometimes. Sometimes some of them, they don't have a transport.
Okay.
To go to see the health authority, because some of the village, the owner of the village, they don't have money or to pay the transport. Because let me say, for instance, we are in Angola and we have to go to see the chief of the head of the constituency. We have to travel a lot of distance.
Okay.
Footing from there so that we can reach and we can deliver the message to notify the chief that there is something happening in my village.
Mm.
We get a challenge. That's why I expect the Minister of, let me say the village is under the Minister of Local Government and Housing, so that they can intervene sometimes, maybe to give them, the headmen, some allowance. Not necessarily salary, or monthly salary. Because I heard now the Ministry of the Local Government and Housing, they are look after the chief, a traditional chief.
Mm.
Yeah, the village might, the village, the headmen, they must be get a little bit allowance, maybe just few to sustain them, to cater the problem when coming in the village, because they are the one first encounter the problem in their village. They must given a little bit. Allowance, just a little bit allowance, like 1,000 a month,
okay.
Or so that they can able to do the job proper. To say thank you very much, Eagle FM, for check up on us and to willing to know what is the situation on the our villages.
Mm.
And I appreciate it, and I thank you very much for the opportunity what you give me to share the viewers and to tell the viewers.
Okay.
The problem which is facing in our villages.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you have it. The time is 30 minutes in the after 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And, of course, that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much. And I'll be handing over to my colleague, Dr. Michael Shaveri, to take us through the unpacking of the day. Thank you so much. And from me, Lois Shimi, it's a good day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana longeshefa ya eshiwike moshuwana. Iye moya wo ota ingongo tisamweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe yongeshefa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa zetu. Moambo dengira selma kodaraje tatu imu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o ambiyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5.